This is the Automotive Repair Podcast Network.
Hey everybody, Carm Capriotto. Good to have you. Couldn't have done this ever without you, your support, your downloads. Don't forget, we have ourselves our own listening app. We're so proud of this. We worked on it for about a year. That's kind of overlaying my face if you're watching on YouTube. And we've got the QR codes up in front. And if you want to just get it and download it, is the Automotive Repair Podcast Network.com/app. But anywhere on that site, you can actually download the app, have fun with it. I love it. We're constantly making improvements to it. You're going to absolutely love it. I've got Crystal Zellmer on the other side of recognizing our great partners. Hey, stay ahead of the curve with NAPA Auto Care's newest auto tech initiatives, Fast Track Assessments, Accelerator Immersive Training, and Tech Assist Smart Support. The future of technician training is here. Connect with your local NAPA representative for more information. Hey, let's face it, your shop management system is the most critical tool in your shop, and NAPA Trax will move your shop into the SMS fast lane with on-site training, 6 days a week support, and local representation. Find NAPA Trax on the web at NAPATRACS.com. Okay, Crystal, hi.
Hi, good morning.
Oh my God, good to have you here. This is going to be your fourth roundabout with us on the podcast, and I'm so excited to have you back. I love just getting in chatting with you. One of the episodes was The Power of Enrollment, Building High-Performing Teams. We can't learn enough about that. We also did The Cost of Needing to Be Right, Finding Balance in Life and in Business. And a lot of the surveys that I've absolutely done with shop owners is work-life balance is in the top three of challenges that they have. So episode 1014, if you want to listen to the reason you want to need to be right for balance in business and in life. And then another one with Dave Shadeen, you were in, we talked about actionable tips for enhancing self-awareness. I hear about self-awareness all the time, everywhere I go. Is that what keeps you in business?
The fascinating part about self-awareness is it feels like the information around it has gone up and the execution of what to do once you have an awareness, the needle hasn't moved quite as much. So I feel like we're on the right track and still deeply needed.
So we're learning, but not doing.
Partially in my experience. We're in an information age, right? So we've got a lot of information.
Crystal Zellmer. I never even said your last name in the beginning. The Clemmer Leadership and Character Development Group. And Coach Dave Shadeen introduced us a long time ago. And it was so great to have you here. We had a discovery call. We're playing around with the title of this. And I want to kind of tease our listener. Either stop making things hard, or do you have the capacity crisis? And I got to tell you, for all the people that I know in the industry, we all could benefit from the fact that we make things hard for ourselves, or because I make it hard for myself, I don't want to give it up to anyone else because I think I'm the only one who can do it right.
Yeah.
That forces my capacity to be so diminished that I'm doing so much work and I'm being labored, I believe, under all kinds of crazy stress. And I know you help people all day long with this.
It's one of my favorite things to coach people on, actually, yeah.
So let's jump into this capacity crisis. I think common among the leaders in our industry, we lack formal training and we struggle with self-confidence. We think we know, but we don't. I think we stumble over decisions, strategic plans, trying to be a better leader. This is coming out sometime in January of 2026. I think it's a great opportunity for people that say, hey, I want to be a better me in 2026.
Absolutely. A question that I ask myself often, especially when we're talking about making it harder than it needs to be, is am I being busy or am I being productive? And how many times are we sprinting full speed on a hamster wheel that's not actually producing an end result that it is we said we wanted in the first place. So we're spending a lot of time, a lot of energy invested in something that's keeping us really busy and not necessarily having the return on the investment of our time or our energy that it is we were hopeful for in the first place.
Got it. Capacity crisis is what you called it. We're trying to work smarter, not harder, but I think you believe that mantra is misapplied.
I do. So we do this sunglasses thing, which I'm sure you can go back to another episode and look at. Because when you have a revelation of a belief system that you hold in your heart, which is all, that's what we do. Then you have awareness, self-awareness around how you're operating on automatic when you're not really paying attention. Now, something most people operate within is life is hard. It's exhausting. It takes so much effort. Running a business is hard. The economy is hard. Having employees is hard. Like all of that stuff is just exhausting. And our thought is, what if it didn't have to be hard? What if it was easy? What if it was a challenge and you were up to it? Now, that is a liberating place to experience and run your business from, right? That's a, what if it didn't have to be hard? And so many times, because we have a deep-seated belief system that life is hard, we will make things harder than they needed to be in the first place, which I'm sure you experience a ton of. Now, how many times have we had the awareness, had the revelation, swung the pendulum all the way to the other side? And the idea or the philosophy was never that you couldn't do hard things. It was, what are you making hard that didn't have to be hard in the first place? So what I have also found from leaders is, and people in general, is they don't want to do harder things, which that's where the capacity crisis comes in my experience. And the people listening might be dealing with this with their employees or with other shop owners or maybe other professionals that they work with, or even customers that are coming in. We were talking about maintenance the other day. And what if your clients have a belief system that maintenance is hard? Does it need to be? I was talking to a different automotive professional about this. He was really on the concept that his clientele didn't want to do maintenance. It was this, well, I hope I don't have to call you this year. And his whole philosophy was, well, if we do this thing right, you won't be in the emergency in the first place. Let's take care of the maintenance so that you're not in the hard situation. The pendulum swinging in my experience.
Okay. You said something just a bit ago, running on automatic. And if we go on automatic, it sometimes isn't pretty. How do we prevent that? How do we ground ourselves to know? I feel so good. I'm doing my things, but your people aren't listening. They're not following. They're looking at you kind of, are you kidding me? I can't believe it's coming out of him, but you are, this is your automatic. This is your backdrop, if you will. Is there a button or a switch or a timer? Oh my God. Is there a timer? Beep. Every once in a while, check yourself.
Yeah. I mean, that would be a great tool to leverage, would be to set some sort of self-awareness check for yourself. I've never talked about that before. The way we teach it is the way to discover your automatic patterns, we call them your sunglasses, is to notice your feelings, notice your behaviors, and then work backwards at what's the thinking that's driving that thing on automatic. Now your whole life becomes a training ground, because you're constantly notice your feelings and noticing your behaviors and working backwards to identify the thinking that's driving that. And then once you have that revelation of the thinking that's driving it, then you're back in the driver's seat of your life and you get to make a choice. So you had the self-awareness and now you get to change behavior. Business owners, I might be touching on a hot button here. Another great way to have a self-discovery is to be really open to feedback from the people around you. Now, I don't know about the other people standing on the phone. That takes a level of humility that's not necessarily common, to be willing to receive feedback, not just from people that you consider peers, from everyone in your life, from the people that are operating as your employees, your customers, your significant others, your children. And all of that, once you're in that mode, when you receive any comment or conversation or anything, now you can go, oh, that's information I could use on a potential pivot. Now, we teach in our organization that feedback is neutral. It's not positive. It's not negative. If you can become neutral to feedback, now you can actually leverage it as information to make different choices if you think there's a more effective choice to be made.
This is exactly what you're here for. You're here to give us as much information you possibly can in the shortest time allowed.
That's exactly it.
I'm thinking about, I ask you the question, is how do we prevent this automatic runaway? And just hearing you, I'm thinking, what about a timeout? I know you may have mentioned the word rewind, but every once in a while, we need to almost come out of our automatic man, person, lady, and say, well, what just happened? What did I say? What did they say? What were the reactions to this? And learn from those timeout or rewind steps. And if on an individual basis, and then you went into this feedback loop, and I thought it was fabulous, where while I'm trying to assess me and what just happened, look in the rearview mirror for just a moment in time, and I got to go back and forward. But what I'm learning, maybe at the end of the day, you go to one of your most personal people and say, listen, you were around me all day today. I did something a little earlier. I kind of maybe went off the wall. What's your thoughts on that? And that helps build what we're looking to build, a stronger level of self-awareness, being a great leader, and getting people to follow.
And if they believe you're open to feedback, you just actually created the context of your organization that you're we eat feedback for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You create a context in your organization that you, as the leader, are open to feedback. Now everyone in your organization is going to follow that. And when a client comes back unhappy, they're going to be so much more willing to hear it, to wrestle it, to work with it, because contextually, you as an organization are open to that conversation. It's huge.
The automotive world is changing fast, and customers are expecting speed, accuracy, and confidence in every repair. To keep your shop competitive, your technicians need training that's smarter, faster, and future-focused. That's why NAPA Auto Care is excited to introduce three new auto tech initiatives: Fast Track Assessments, the Accelerator Training Program, and Tech Assist. It all starts with Fast Track Assessments. This tool pinpoints a technician's exact skill level, whether they're a student, job applicant, or a new hire, so you know their strengths and where they need improvement without putting a customer's vehicle at risk. Then comes Accelerator Training Program. Using immersive technologies like virtual reality, augmented reality, and AI-driven simulations, it compresses years of technician development into just months. Trainees practice real-world jobs, alignments, brakes, diagnostics, in a safe, virtual-first environment with instant feedback. Instead of tying up your senior techs, they can focus on customers, while new hires become billable, competent team members in record time. And once they're on the job, Tech Assist keeps that support going. Through AR-capable smart safety glasses, your technicians can instantly pull up torque specs, wire colors, component locations, and even connect with a live expert who sees exactly what they see, providing guidance step by step. System integration with information platforms and DVI streamline workflow and boost efficiency. This assess, accelerate, assist approach helps your shops deliver better quality repairs, faster training, and long-term success. The full solution launches March 2026, but beta registration is now open. Want your shop to lead the future of automotive training? Connect with your local NAPA representative today. Hey, let's face it. Your shop management system is the single most important tool in your shop, period. NAPA Trax has made selecting the right shop management system easy by offering the industry's best, most comprehensive SMS. Now, it all starts when a local representative meets with you to learn about your business and how you need to run it. After all, it's your shop, so it's your choice. And having local representation is a huge plus. Customizing Trax to your business, whether you're a one-person shop or a large multi-bay or multi-location company, a representative consults with you to help optimize your shop's workflow, efficiency, and profitability. Trax always has the flexibility to do business how you need to do it, which means it can also grow as your business grows. And unlike the other guys, we'll be there for you after installation with the best training and support in the business. Yes, a learning management system tailored to each role in your company. Simply put, Trax was designed and built for shop owners just like you. Visit us on the web at NAPATRAX, that's NAPATRACS.com. You said to me in our discovery call, you are responsible for your results and you are not your results.
Yes, my mentor, Kimberly Zink, taught me that.
That rocked me a lot. You are responsible for your results, and you are not your results.
So the story behind that and how I got it was I had said I was going to do something, and I didn't create what I said I was going to. And I was down. I was my shoulder. You could tell that I was carrying it and it was heavy. And as business owners, maybe people on the line can relate to that. You're responsible for people. I take that really seriously. I'm responsible for feeding families. I'm responsible for making sure the business works. I'm responsible for client retention and continual acquisition of clients. I'm responsible at the end of the day for a lot of this stuff. And that can become heavy when we miss the mark or I miss the mark. And she was watching me basically allow my misses to become my identity. And it was weighing me down. So she just said, you know, you aren't your results, right? It kind of flattened me because I had become so attached to I am what I can create. And we do a whole piece on this, and I can take out the flip chart if you want to, or maybe even just paint the picture in people's minds. But basically, if I believe I am my results, then I am going to be like a buoy in the water. When I create good results, I'm going to allow myself to have a good day. When I create quote unquote bad results, good, bad, right, or wrong, right? I don't fully believe in that. But that heaviness that came with not just I made a mistake, now I am a mistake. And that's the birthplace of like shame and guilt and all this stuff. So she flattened me. You are not your results. You're responsible for your results. But true responsibility, personal responsibility at its core best has no heaviness attached to it. My dad used to say that if you're still feeling heavy after you come from personal responsibility, you're actually still in victim. You're just no longer victim to the situation. You're victim to your results. You're victim to your choices. Totally different place to play.
It reminds me of taking blame. And I get and I understand that if I'm the leader and I'm responsible for the profit and the forward success of this business, hiring really great people, developing a great team, all the 30 to 50 things you're responsible for, and you don't take the blame. And I think there's a lot of, how do we get out of the blame game?
Yeah. When personal responsibility turns into blame, shame, guilt, it's ineffective. Different mentor of mine used to say, Crystal, you know, shame isn't an indicator that you care more, right? And I just was like, wow, at some level, I had this belief that if I felt really bad about it, then people would know how much I cared. And the reality was I was wasting a ton of energy that I could have been using to solve problems on feeling bad about the problems that I didn't solve well. And that's, to me, not good stewardship of my energy.
Powerful stuff. If I don't know how to solve problems, I've got to go get help. I need a peer group. I need a coach. I need someone to help me know this stuff so that I can get up and over it and not feel the blame game. Again, you said shame, it's not an indicator that you care.
I was using it as that, which it's not.
Got it. So don't use shame. Go get help. Figure out what you got to do next. And again, I've been an advocate for the last 10 plus years on getting coaches and or mentoring group, networking group, peer groups to help an individual up and over getting out of their, oh, well, my ego tells me that I'm smart and I know everything and I can't get help. I would never want to admit to anybody that I know that I went and got a coach. And then when I see people get coaches and in 10 years, they have so much money, so much opportunity. They're getting ready to retire because they've done so well. It'd be like, they say, my heart hurts, but I'm not going to go to the cardiologist.
Yeah. Well, then we're right back into, if it's hard, do it hard, but it doesn't have to be hard. And I think most people don't hire a coach because they have no idea that they're making it harder on themselves than it needs to be. If there's 10 options available, getting a coach is basically like hiring an assisted advantage. Some people won't do that because they think it doesn't count if I didn't do it myself. It's not real if I didn't pull up my own bootstraps, you know?
Assisted advantage. I got a coach because I'm failing. No, you got a coach because you wanted an assisted advantage. Wow.
Yeah, we teach it in our organization as leverage. Leverage is an assisted advantage.
Oh my God, I even love that. Get leverage. See, and that's a really powerful, positive word. I got leverage.
I got leverage. Yeah. And most people see leverage as like if you were being leveraged, like you're being taken advantage of, which is just a different automatic set of sunglasses that will keep you from receiving leverage, which is actually a great thing and just an assisted advantage.
If I gain leverage and I can actually leverage that to grow my business, I got leverage so that I can leverage.
Absolutely.
Did that all make sense?
It did to me.
I'm rambling. Oh my God. One of the other things that we talked about, and I think this kind of falls into this, is the M&M, the peanut M&M metaphor. We've got to share that.
Yes. So this exists in one of our books, When Good Intention Runs Smack into Reality by Brian Clemmer. And he uses this analogy like you're a peanut M&M. You were in front of me. We would be going back and forth, right? As the audience listener. On the very outer layer, there's a colored candy coating, right? That makes it green, makes it red, makes it whatever it is. Right underneath that, there is a white candied shell. Underneath that is the chocolate layer. And inside that is the peanut M&M. So if you were going to bite that in half, you would see all the different layers that would exist within this peanut M&M. Our belief is that is a representation of layers of you. So on the very outer coat, you have your actions and your behaviors. You are not your actions and you are not your behaviors. Those are just the outer layer that everybody can see. Now, people may judge you on that thing, but you are not your behaviors. How do we know that? Because you can change them. They're choices, right? Just underneath your actions and your behaviors is your feelings and your emotions. So that white kind of candy coating, we consider that layer your feelings and your emotions. So your feelings typically drive your behaviors and your actions. Get angry, you say something you didn't want to say. You feel elated over something, now you are giving, generous, whatever the thing is. So that layer, that feelings and emotions layer, you are not your feelings. And to be really frank, we often identify ourselves as our feelings. And I'm going to suggest that that's not doing great things for our society. I'm angry, you're now making a self-proclamation about who you are based off of something that can be very fleeting. I have a friend of mentor, coach, whatever, somebody I saw on stage that I really appreciate. Dr. Dave Martin said, he posted this meme and I share it all the time. He said, was it really a bad day? Or was it a bad 5 minutes that you milked all day? Gosh, isn't that so true? I had a 5 minute experience, a 30 minute phone call I didn't like. And did I call the whole day? Was I angry all day because of a 5 minute interaction that I didn't appreciate? So you are not your feelings and you are not your emotions and you're not your behaviors and you're not your actions. Just under that is your chocolate layer, which is the thinking layer. Now, when we say thinking, I'm not talking about positive thinking. I'm talking about the thinking that exists at a subconscious level. You're thinking in your heart. That is where your paradigms, your programs, your belief systems, we call them sunglasses, that's where those exist. So in that layer, that thinking at the heart level layer, that is, again, not you. And those are the things that, because they're running so under the surface that most people don't even realize they're thinking. Now, it's also been proven that I've been taught that all thinking comes first. The thought precedes the feeling, precedes the behavior. So if you look at that in a chain of events, and if you really wanted to change a behavior, the greatest way to do it is to change a belief system that you have in your heart. That's what we would call transformation because it's inward out change. There's multiple different types of change, but that's like long lasting transformation happens when you have inward out change, meaning you change something at that chocolate level, that thinking in the heart space level. Now, you are not your thinking. How do we know that? Because you can change it. You can change belief systems that you hold in your heart through repetition and emotional involvement. Repetition and emotional involvement are the ways to change the thinking that you have in your heart. And you are not your thinking. You're the nut in the middle. You're that inside core piece. That's you. That's the piece of you that's rooted in identity. Now, I'm a born again believer. We could go into a whole different route there. And like that nut in the middle, that's you. So if you can really begin to go, oh, I'm not my thinking. I'm not my feelings. I'm not my behaviors. Now you have some separation from, I think, some of the heaviness that comes when we think we are all of those things. Now, all of those things we're responsible for, because at the end of the day, life has prices and benefits, and you are going to reap prices and benefits for all of your thinking, all of your feelings, all of your behaviors in real time. It's just they're not who you are. And Brian used to say all the time that your past does not dictate your future unless you allow it to. It doesn't have to dictate your future unless you allow it to. Did I go deep on you, Carm?
Yeah, you did. Extremely deep. And if you're watching on the video, you could see my face or my eyes in this heaviness of thought. And my big takeaway here is if you're the core nut inside, what's above it are layers that you have to be worried, yet you have to control or manipulate. Or am I thinking right?
All of those things are choices you make.
They're my choices. I'm the nut. I'm in the middle. I'm the core. And all these layers on side of me, frankly, it's what you get that I allow you to get.
Yes.
Oh, there it is.
There it is. It's what you get that you allow to get. Yep.
What I allow you to get. Oh, damn, this is heavy. This is heavy.
I was going to go liberating.
Okay. Yeah, that too.
For our business owners, that means you lost your temper one time. That's not who you are. You know, you lost a client. That's not who you are. You were in the red instead of the black one year. That's not who you are. It's just a choice. It's just a season, and it's all bounceable if you stay in the game.
Okay. You said the word balanceable that I love, and I thought of the word fix. It's all fixable.
Fixable, yes.
And if it's fixable, it's balanceable because, oh, I love the word balanceable. The more I think about you, you can do we'll fix that. No, if I fix it, it's got to fit in the solution and the culture. And that's why it's balanceable.
It's a new word. I actually thought I said bounceable. So balanceable, I think, is even better. I love it when something new comes out of the best.
I heard balanceable.
I like it. We're running with it.
Yeah, to me, that makes a lot of sense. Because if you go for a fix, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to make things level. You know, we may put pressure on the teeter-totter thing here. There needs to be pressure on both sides in order for it to balance out. So not every fix is going to work, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. And you'll only know what works to fix and what doesn't based on the results of whether or not it does. And what will fix in one season will not fix in another season. I can only imagine that business looks completely different for shop owners right now than it did 5 years ago, than it did 10 years ago.
Heavy, heavy, heavy. Every time I hang out with Crystal, this happens. And I always say, I'm not worthy. You're so smart.
Oh, no, 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 no. This is that personal development place of going like, oh, there's so much more. There's always so much more.
There's a lot there. Hey, there was one other thing we talked about, and I really want to cover it before we end. And we were talking about delegation versus dumping. And I loved the things you said. It says, type A drivers, they dump tasks on people without proper training or mentorship because we can.
And again, you'll hear me say so many times because I've just gotten to learn from a lot of incredible people. So I will always give credit back to where I got certain revelation. It was a mentor of mine, Bob Harrison, and he was talking about leverage from the perspective of increase and multiplication, and that you really can't multiply until you figure out how to delegate. And then he went into this coaching moment that he had around, did you delegate or did you dump? And then I started unwinding all of these things And I don't know if there's any other dominant personality styles on the phone, on the line, on the podcast. I personally would get so much that I felt like I, quote unquote, had to get done. And I would feel all this heaviness, and then I would choose overwhelm. And then I would be in this breaking point where I was like, I finally set it up where I have to trust somebody to do something. And then I would just hand over all of this stuff that people really weren't trained to do or do well. Here's the scary part. We talked about the need to be right episode. If I already operate from a belief system or a set of sunglasses that nobody else can do it as well as I can do it, and then I get myself into this pickle where I've set it up to where I'm dumping on people, then I get to be right about the fact that other people can't do it as well as I can. I take it back. Now, my need to be needed, my need to be important, my need to be the center of the, you know, and I don't mean that from a negative perspective. I'm just saying we all build in these different beliefs unconsciously. Nobody's doing it consciously. And now my people around me who desperately just wanted to help me felt incapable. Now they feel like I've taken it back, and I've created all of these painful inner working dynamics that just didn't work. We can lead this right back into feedback. What if people not doing the task up to my standard didn't mean they weren't capable? What if that was just feedback for how I trained them in the first place? No blame, no shame, no guilt. And if they didn't do it the way I wanted it done, then all I go is, oh, I didn't spend enough time training them the way that would have served them to do it how I was expecting it to be done in the first place.
You just described a lot of issues that exist in small business today.
Totally.
And I go back to the thoughts of the lack of the processes and the systems that we don't have. We expect someone to do something they were never coached, trained, mentored about. It's not right. And then you go off the deep end, and the ugliness, the whirlwind of ugliness, and the people unwilling to even lift a finger the next time you request help, support, or you're even delegated, they may just half delegate the task because they know they're never going to do it right. Yeah. So delegation versus dumping. The word delegate means you've really taken the time to explain what the end result needs to look like, and it needs to be laden with policies and systems and culture and ethics and all that stuff. It just needs to be, whatever the word right means, it needs to be right according, not according to you, but according to the person who finished the job. When the person finished the job, you could say, hey, do you think that's right according to you?
Yeah.
There's a great question. If you're trying to become a better delegator and not a dumper, and you think you may have dumped, then ask the person you're not happy with their work, but are you happy with your work?
Yeah, so good. I love the gym analogy. Like, I use it all the time. If you and I went to the gym together and you watched me lift weights, you have no muscle. You can watch me lift weights all day long. You will not gain any muscle. How many times have we trained people by going, come watch me lift weights? And then they still don't have the muscle to carry the task you're asking them to do in the first place. That leadership is not about just knowledge training. It's about, can you carry the weight of what it takes for customer relations? So now it's allowing them to lift a lighter weight until they're used to what that feels like. Now they have capacity. They have some wins under their belt. Instead of going, hey, go lift that 350-pound dumbbell that I've been doing for 20 years. It's like, yes, and they haven't practiced with what it takes to build the muscle, to be in the place where then they're your trusted guy. And maybe they still can't lift 350 next to you, but you've watched them lift 250. So now they can take all 250 and under problems, and you take the 250 and up until they lift more weights, lift more weights, lift more weights. And now you're not just dumping a problem they don't have the muscle to handle. You've actually built up the muscle within them to be able to sustain the kind of leadership you're requiring from them.
What an incredible ending to this episode. Because I just wrote down this metaphor, do they have the muscle?
and everything's the muscle. Emotional intelligence is the muscle. Their skill set within the automotive is a muscle. Their ability to do the finances is a muscle. Like, it's all a muscle.
Do they have the muscle? Whatever the request was, you're going to lift 100, you're going to lift 300. Do they have the muscle to do that particular job or task?
And if they don't have the muscle, the answer isn't going, you're not capable, because that's where our capacity crisis is coming in. Then we're going, I'll just take it all back. It's like, okay, well, 250 didn't work. Let's try 100 and watch you do some reps and watch the muscle. And so let's find the place where your capacity is, because capacity is this fascinating concept, because I really believe capacity grows with testing and it shrinks when it's not used. So if I'm always playing under the weight in which somebody can carry, I'm actually responsible for their capacity shrinking, because I, as a leader, have not placed on them proper
response.
Yeah.
Sounds like three syllables.
Well, and I keep going back to, if you haven't read the book, The Anxious Generation, it's really good, whether or not you're a parent, just a great book. And he talks about trees. There's anti-fragility, which is basically like trees in a biodome will not be able to, they can't grow and they can't survive, even though it's perfect conditions, because there's no wind, and the wind creates deeper roots. And so when we take away the wind, that's the visual that kept coming to me. When we take away the wind, what we're really doing is we're taking away their ability to deep roots. We get to keep the testing. We get to keep the strength building. We get to keep putting people and ourselves in positions of things that we don't know if we can handle, because it tests our muscle, gives us feedback. We start again.
Stop the episode. Go back to the beginning where we talked about capacity crisis so that you can get this thing looped in. And when you said they can't grow without wind, and so if you don't have wind in your life, you can't grow. And wind must be the challenges that we face in our own personal growth and self-awareness and confidence and capacity and this perpetual studency that we need to have in our life.
So good. My dad used to say, you know, if he used to threaten to fire people who weren't failing. I know that sounds crazy. It's true. If you're, because, you know, and two of my really profound mentors would be like, when was the last big mistake you made? They're like, Brian, we haven't made any. It's clean record. And he's like, well, then I'm going to get to let you go. Because if we're asking other people to risk and we're not, you're not growing. If you're not risking, you're not growing, period. And if you're not failing occasionally, you're not in the arena.
It was one of the John Maxwell books that hit me so hard when I started to become a fan of his and starting to read, because I realized I was a really poor leader, Fail Forward. You know, I think that was one of his books. If you're not failing, you're not growing. And that's where the ego needs to get out of our world and our life and realize that it's part of the wind.
Totally. And what if we could culturally get in a place, and I do love to do this, where like somebody falls that's around us, like another business owner, whatever, we're like, way to go. You're on the field. You know, you did, like, that's the kind of culture I want to live in. Like, you made a big mistake. Welcome to the party. Like, grateful to be alive right next to you.
This was way too much fun, as we always seem to get together and we get into these deep little cool pockets or zones. And they have so much fun, so much here for people to take away. This is worthy of a double listen, at least. Crystal Zellmer, VP, Clemmer, Leadership and Character Development. Wow, your fourth episode with me. Please go back and listen to the other ones. We'll have them on the show notes. Crystal, thank you so much for being here.
We'll get to do it again. I'm so grateful. Grateful for the opportunity to be with you and your people.
Thank you.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive repair business podcast, Remarkable Results Radio. Get your episodic education on the ARPN listening app at automotiverepairpodcastnetwork.com. Also, enjoy the podcast on our Carm Capriotto YouTube channel. Carm is all for advancing the professional automotive service industry. Until next time.